Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we will continue reading from the June-July 2025 issue of Guideposts with articles like Cat Power, Animals and Healing, Cat Power. I knew that my daughter would bond with these kittens. They had the same condition she did, but I had never imagined how they would change our lives. By Michelle Clock, Exeter, New Hampshire. It was a ski trip that did it. I had taken my 11-year-old daughter, Bailey, to a Special Olympics Winter Games event at a ski resort here in New Hampshire. Bailey has cerebral palsy and had been skiing with an adaptive ski program since she was 4. We enjoyed skiing together, and I thought she would have fun at the games. But her anxiety got the better of her. Despite my coaxing and encouragement, she wouldn't leave our cabin the entire time. It made me sad to see her missing out on not only some great skiing, but also making new friends. I went home convinced that I had to do something to make Bailey face her fears. I fought fiercely for my daughter when people put limitations on her. In fact, I'd been known to go full-on mama bear in her defense, maybe because I was a single mom and didn't trust anyone else to look out for my little girl. Still, I understood that if she never stepped out from under my protection, she would never grow. Sometimes a person needs to be pushed in order to overcome a challenge and make a breakthrough. I'd seen that in my work as a speech pathologist and in my own journey learning to live with a visual impairment from a traumatic brain injury I'd sustained years ago in a car accident. Why not use Bailey's love of animals as motivation? We'd been looking for a friend for our cat Chloe ever since our other cat died several months earlier. Now I shifted my search to adopting from another state, one far enough away that we would have to take a plane to pick up our new pet. Bailey was afraid of flying, going to unfamiliar places, and meeting new people. If she wanted another kitty, she'd have to do all those things. Every day I checked animal rescue websites looking for a cat that my daughter wouldn't be able to resist. My search eventually led me to Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. As soon as I read the write-up on Popcorn and Cheddar, a pair of orange tabby kittens, I knew they were meant for us, even though I hadn't intended to adopt two cats. They were brother and sister, 12 weeks old. Both had been diagnosed with cerebellar hypoplasia, the feline version of cerebral palsy. The female kitten, Cheddar, also had a visual impairment. I showed their listing to Bailey. "What do you think?" I asked. "Popcorn and Cheddar are like you and me," she said, her face lighting up. "We have to adopt them." "We'll have to fly all the way to Utah to get them," I said. "Would you be okay with that?" Bailey nodded slowly. That's progress, I thought. She hadn't been willing to consider flying before. As it turned out, the sanctuary arranged to fly the kittens to an airport near us. No need for us to get on a plane, to Bailey's relief and my disappointment. Would I be able to come up with something else to help her overcome her fears? The Best Friends staff told us Popcorn and Cheddar's neurological condition caused them to walk with an unsteady gait and fall down often. They couldn't climb stairs or jump up onto a couch. Bailey and I kitchen-proofed our house before their arrival. We covered sharp corners and hung cloth under the kitchen table and chairs to make low hammocks for them to sleep in. We bought a low-profile litter box that would be easier for them to use. Bailey and I were used to making adaptations. We'd done it all her life. She was born 6 weeks early, and immediately doctors informed me something wasn't right. At just 2 days old, my little girl was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. I was told she would never walk, run, or be able to live a normal life. Bailey defied the doctor's predictions and took her first steps when she was 2.5 years old. I was so proud of how far she'd come. Bailey still had her struggles. She had learning disabilities associated with cerebral palsy. School was difficult for her, academically and socially. Being different from her peers bothered her. She hesitated to attempt new things and clammed up around others, particularly in public settings. Yet she braved the airport not once but twice to pick up the kittens. While we waited for their flight, Bailey watched planes take off. I could see the tension in her body, but she didn't ask to leave. Minutes before their flight was due to arrive, I got a call from a Best Friend staff member. The kittens weren't on the flight. During their layover, an airline employee noticed they seemed wobbly and took them to a vet to be checked out. I explained about their neurological condition, the staffer said, but the airline wanted to be sure. They're spending the night at the vet and they'll be on a flight to you tomorrow. I was surprised and grateful the airline took such care with our new babies. Bailey didn't even mind having to come back to the airport the next day to get them. We fell in love with popcorn and cheddar right away. They were curious, playful, and so much fun. We'd had the kittens for only a few days when one of Bailey's friends came over to meet them. I overheard her friend ask, "Will they ever be able to climb the stairs?" "You never know," Bailey said. "I wasn't supposed to walk, but now I can run. I'm not going to let anyone tell these kittens what they can or can't do." "Yes," I'd said about Bailey so often, but this was the first time I heard her take the same stance. I felt like doing a fist pump. Something shifted in Bailey as she watched the kittens grow. It was as if a light switch had turned on. Being different wasn't a bad thing. It just required an adjustment in perspective. When she taught Popcorn and Cheddar something new, such as how to play with feather toys, she would say, "It's all right if it takes you some time to get this. Even a baby step is a step in the right direction." Bailey adopted this positive, accepting attitude toward herself. One day she was playing with Cheddar when the kitten got startled. Her muscles tensed up, and for a moment she couldn't move. "Mom, Cheddar's body is doing what mine does when there's a fire drill at school," Bailey said. "I hope she's not scared. It's just something that happens to our muscles, and it's okay." The kitten's unique personalities emerged. Popcorn likes to live life in the fast lane. He does this little hop-roll move to chase toys. And our other cat, Chloe. He's fearless and daring. Cheddar falls down a lot more often than her brother. She moves slowly and carefully with determination in her eyes. Her condition hasn't stopped her from learning to walk outside on a leash. Popcorn and Cheddar thrive despite their challenges, and Bailey did the same. "Mom, I want to learn how to ride a bike," she said one day. "You already know how to ride." "I ride an adapted bike. I want to ride a two-wheeler." I was blown away by how Bailey's confidence had blossomed, but it also had me navigating a new parenting path. Could she really handle these bigger tests? 2 weeks later, Bailey was riding a two-wheeler, and the smile on her face was all the answer I needed. Welcoming Cheddar and Popcorn into our family has been good for me, too. Every other week, I put them in a stroller and we walk to the painting class I take at an art studio. Passersby stopped to pet the cats and ask about their condition and how they're doing. Seeing people accept our kitties has made me notice how many people accept Bailey, too. I used to automatically go on the defensive, but now I see so many folks who are cheering for her to do well. And she has. In February 2019, Bailey and I returned to the Special Olympics Winter Games event. This time, I didn't have to plead with her to leave our cabin or ride the ski lift. She did those things on her own. She introduced herself to other kids and competed in two downhill ski races. She fell a few times and picked herself right back up. She even took home two gold medals. I'd adopted two kittens with special needs, knowing it would change their lives. I never dreamed that it would change our lives, too. Popcorn and Cheddar accomplished something I hadn't been able to. They helped Bailey see that she could be just like them, fearless and determined. Making marriage work. Our yard wasn't all that needed a makeover. A Rocky Start by Lynn Hartke, Chandler, Arizona. The mayor of Chandler, Arizona, better known to me as my husband Kevin, strode into the kitchen as I was putting the final touches on dinner. "Great news," he said, sampling the simmering stew on the stove. "The city is offering a rebate to homeowners as an incentive to replace their grass." "We've been talking about putting in rock and desert-friendly plants for years," I said. "It would be nice to have a yard that uses less water." "Yep," Kevin said. "This is the time to do it." "You mean like now?" "Of course," Kevin said. "Is there a problem? Aren't you heading into budget season? Our city's fiscal year begins each June." From experience, I knew that Kevin's schedule would be packed with meetings throughout the spring. "I have a window before the pace picks up," he said. "We can make it happen." "Great," I said. That worked for me. Kevin would take charge of the project. I would be his helper. The yard was his responsibility, after all, the same way grocery shopping was mine. A few days later, armed with hoes and shovels, we decided to tackle the first step, removing the existing grass. But it proved to be an enormous undertaking. The roots of our Bermuda grass extended several feet into the ground. There was no digging it out. I took on the task of spraying the lawn with an herbicide recommended by the city, waiting, then spraying again, repeating the process over and over. There was no going forward until every blade of grass and the roots underneath were dead. Meanwhile, I'd gone to the city's Water Conservation Department website and downloaded 3 pages of single-spaced instructions we'd have to follow to get the rebate. I'd read the list, put it away, and planned to come back to it. The details were mind-numbing. Kevin, however, showed not the faintest interest in any of it. This was supposed to be his project. 2 weeks into my effort to kill the grass, I found Kevin at the kitchen table answering his morning emails. "Listen to this," I said, my eyes glued to the instructions. "Draw the yard to scale, determine the square footage of rock, put in a drip water system." My voice rose with each item on the list. Had Kevin even thought of all the time this was going to take? "Choose from a list of approved plants," I continued. "What does that mean?" "Isn't it all on the website?" Kevin asked, not lifting his eyes from the computer screen. "Yes, but is there a number you can call with questions?" "Sure." "Start there then," he said, with a half smile, returning to his emails. "Sorry, but I need to answer these. Budget meeting tonight." Kevin's mind was on a different list now, one that involved police, fire, water, sewers, libraries, and parks. All the details of a well-run city. His window of time had slammed shut. The landscaping project I thought would be a joint effort with Kevin in charge had suddenly landed in my lap. Why can't Kevin be more like my dad? The thought planted itself inside me as I quietly left the room. Whenever my parents visited our house, I had a list of projects ready for Dad. A teacher by trade, he'd also been a self-taught handyman who liked to tackle home projects. After he died, Mom had walked me around their 3-acre property in Minnesota, showing me everything they had created together, from the dozens of flower beds to the decorative wooden windmill that spun over the immaculate yard. "I dreamed of the idea," she said. "Your dad made those dreams come true." I tried to give Kevin the benefit of the doubt. We'd been happily married for 4 decades. I knew he was busy. In addition to being mayor, he was a pastor. But why, when we had talked for years about redoing our landscaping to reduce water use, was he now as absent as the desert rainstorm? Why couldn't he find time to make my dream come true instead of leaving me with all the work? The project inched along. Finally, after 6 weeks, the grass was dead. On to the next steps. There was no way I could install a drip system myself, but Kevin seemed completely unavailable. Then there was choosing and buying the plants, a task nearly as daunting as the irrigation system. I wasn't much of a gardener. One morning, I stared out at the dust bowl of our yard, then turned to the instructions yet again, hoping for inspiration. Once the plants reach maturity, they need to cover 50% of the yard to reduce urban heat. Otherwise, the plants will be rejected. "Kevin," I heard myself say, stretching his name into 3 syllables. I found him on the phone in the kitchen and waited not so patiently until he was done. 50%, I said, holding the paper so tightly that it crumpled. "How are we going to cover 50% of our yard with plants? That will cost a fortune." Kevin smoothed out the wrinkles in the list and scanned the requirements. "We'll need to plant a tree." "A tree," I said. "Do you remember I am the tree killer, right? The trees come to our yard for hospice care." I enumerated the 5 trees we had planted in the past few years that had all died in the relentless desert heat. "The city will be holding a tree planting demo next Saturday," Kevin said. "They're giving away free trees." "Free? Okay, I could do free." That weekend, I stood in a circle with other prospective tree owners while an arborist showed us how to plant a tree in the desert. "You want to dig your hole only as deep as the root ball," the man said, shoveling out the first layer of dirt, "and only twice as wide." "What happens if you make a bigger and deeper hole?" a woman asked. "Mostly newly planted desert trees die because the holes are too large," the arborist explained. "When the roots reach the hard desert soil, they turn around rather than stretch into the more difficult environment. As a result, the trees become root-bound and die." He went on to proper watering techniques, but my eyes were laser-focused on the hole at my feet, only as big as required. I'd been digging wrong. No wonder our previous trees had all died. I loaded my new 3-foot-tall desert willow into the back of the car, careful with its slender branches. When the willow bloomed the following summer, its pink, trumpet-shaped flowers would entice bees and other pollinators. Wait until I tell Kevin how to dig holes for trees. A second thought followed, one that didn't come from me. What about the hole you're digging in your marriage? On the drive home, I mulled over how I'd been sending out roots of expectation into my marriage that had turned back on me in resentment. Expecting my husband to be exactly like my dad was choking our relationship. I remembered a verse I had learned in Sunday school about the importance of being rooted and grounded in love. Did I really want to be rooted in resentment instead? That night, I had an honest conversation with Kevin. I told him my revelation about the two kinds of holes I'd been digging, how my expectations had been both unspoken and unfair, and how I needed him to be more involved with this landscaping project. "I know I got us into this," Kevin said. "Let's go over the list together." "Do you care what plants I buy?" I asked. "Desert marigolds or cactus or agaves?" The website has more than 600 photos of low water use plants. "Could some of the plants be edible?" Kevin asked, scrolling through the plants. "If we planted prickly pear cactus, we could harvest the fruit in the fall." I made a note. I like that idea. "We could plant rosemary and desert lavender," I said, naming two herbs that grow in our arid climate. I added them to the landscaping design. "How about rock color? Any preference?" "Absolutely none. I can't figure out the watering system. Should I hire someone?" "I can adapt what we currently use for the lawn. I'll find the time, I promise," Kevin said. "I can also help move all the rock once it's delivered. Anything else?" I smiled. "I think we're good." After that, things moved quickly. I researched plants, choosing varieties that would bloom throughout the year. Friends gave me cactus cuttings, along with advice from their own experience of desert landscaping. Kevin completed the irrigation system and organized friends and neighbors to distribute 10 tons of rocks across our yard. We talked about expectations, and there was something exhilarating in discovering that even a good marriage has room to grow. At last, 4 months after we'd embarked on this landscaping project, it was all done. All the plants, agave, beaver tail, prickly pear cactus, desert globe mallow, rosemary, and aloe vera among them were in place. Kevin and I stood in our front yard, leaning on our shovels. "Do you really wish I were more like your dad?" Kevin asked. "What?" "No. I was determined to stop that seed from taking root. Look what we created," I said, admiring our beautiful yard, including the desert willow and its properly dug hole. I gave Kevin's arm a squeeze. It felt good to make our dreams come true together. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guidepost's other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Spiritual Notebook. I used to talk on the phone with my mom every day over coffee. Mornings just didn't feel right without her. A New Day by Leah Vidal, New Braunfels, Texas. Even after 3 months, there were days when it took all that I had to get out of bed in the morning. This was one of those days. I heard my husband and our two teenagers leave for work and school. It was just me alone in the house, alone with my grief. I stared at the bedroom ceiling and gave myself a pep talk. "You can do this, one step at a time. Get up, take a shower, get dressed, face the day." I showered, dressed, then dragged myself to the kitchen and made coffee. I wasn't an all-day-long coffee drinker, but I had to have my morning cup. Usually I take that first rich, delicious sip, sit back and think, "Ah, all's right with the world." Not anymore. Not since my mom died unexpectedly in September. She'd been healthy and active, the caregiver for my older brother who had special needs. They lived in Florida and had been planning to move to our house in Texas, where there was plenty of room and I could help with caregiving. Then my brother died in his sleep. 2 weeks later, Mom was gone too. Cardiac arrest. Mom and I used to start our days talking on the phone over coffee. We hadn't lived in the same state since my college days, but we spoke often. Our morning ritual really began in earnest after I became a mom myself, maybe because I needed her advice more. We covered so much in our coffee chats, big things and everyday things, what my daughter and son were up to, what mom had going on that day, family news, books we were reading, music, recipes, current events. And there was always prayer. Sometimes we'd kick off our call with a prayer. Sometimes we'd end with one, sometimes both. We prayed for family and friends, for their health and peace. We asked God to help people facing earthquakes, wildfires, hunger, and poverty, to guide our country's leaders to work together. It was our way of trying to fix the world, as Mom would say. Occasionally, we'd get into deeper conversations over issues we'd been praying about or hadn't seen come to fruition. On those days, one cup of coffee turned into two. Things will happen in God's time, she'd tell me. Mom had tremendous faith and instilled that in me. I would talk to God throughout the day, checking in with him just the way Mom and I would check in with each other, in quick texts or calls. Now I sat where I normally had my chats with her, at a small antique table by the windows that looked out on our back lawn. I took a sip of my coffee. It just didn't taste right. Mornings just didn't feel right without Mom. I couldn't even pray because I was so upset she wasn't there to pray with me. I was in no mood to talk to God. I was mad at him for taking my mom from me. How could he let me lose her just as we were about to make a home together? And the way she died, Mom had never had medical problems, never been hospitalized until she developed an irregular heartbeat after my brother's death. I'd rushed to Florida. It was 2021 at the tail end of the COVID pandemic, and the hospital hadn't yet lifted restriction on visitors. I'd begged to be allowed into her room to hold her hand for just a moment, to no avail. Mom died alone. I choked down more of my coffee. I knew I just couldn't keep going through the motions each day instead of really living. My husband was worried about me. My sister-in-law, Adrian, checked on me regularly, sending texts, uplifting quotes, a video she thought might make me smile. Christmas was coming. You've got to make an effort, I told myself, if only for the kids. I tried. I bought gifts, put up decorations, baked cookies. I forced myself to act cheerful when we got together with my in-laws. Adrian gave me a little book bound in brown leather. "This is my favorite devotional," she said. She showed me her own copy, which was worn from years of use. There were words and sentences highlighted. If something good stood out to her on a particular day, "God is my strength. Never alone. Be still." She added the year, 2016, 2018, 2019. Some devotions had a note in the margin about why it had spoken to her. She told me that every year she'd revisit the highlighted sections and her accompanying notes. They reminded her of where she had been as well as how far she'd come since then. "I don't know if this is something you've ever done, but it has helped me through some tough times," Adrian said. "Maybe it will help you too." I gave her a big hug and set the devotional on my coffee chat table. The next 5 days, whenever I walked past the table, the book called to me. I'd enjoyed doing Bible studies and daily devotions in the past, but my life had been in a good place back then. I doubted anything like that could help me now. Still, I needed a new morning routine. Mom would want that for me, too. On January 1st, I poured myself a cup of coffee and sat down at the antique table by the windows. I picked up the little brown leather devotional, took a deep breath, and opened it to the first page. I cried so hard the words were a blur, but it was short enough to get through. Each morning after that, I read another page in the devotional. Day by day, I highlighted passages and filled the margins with notes. Slowly, my grief receded. There was no replacing my conversations with Mom, and my morning cup of coffee might never taste as good, but I knew she would be pleased that I was starting my day with prayer again. Mom was right. I found myself telling God one morning, "Things happen in your time." For more on this story, see Family Room. Continued, how a story made a difference. Thriving in new home. A A few years back, I shared a story in Guidepost, The Good Seeds, April 2021, about some seeds I discovered tucked away in the back of the garage of our century-old city house. A note found with the seeds dated them to the 1940s and identified them as hibiscus. I planted the seeds in a large pot, and amazingly, they grew, but the hibiscus never flowered. Then, 3 years ago, my wife and I were thrilled when we were finally able to fulfill a longtime dream of ours, to move out of the city to a small house in the country. Our dogs loved to romp across the expanse of our property of more than an acre. We took the hibiscus bush with us and transplanted it in the front yard. It grew strong and filled out there. And last summer, for the first time, it bloomed. Huge, deep pink flowers that brightened our yard. God sure knew what he was doing with the timing, as we were thriving in our new home, too. Mike Frison, Rexford, New York. Healing care. As a Dominican religious sister and pastoral care interfaith counselor with Arch Care at Home, a licensed visiting nurse service that's part of the continuing care community of the Archdiocese of New York, I am grateful for Guidepost's outreach, free inspirational resources. Besides in-home visits by our clinicians, we offer our patients and their caregivers a phone call ministry and spiritual and emotional support by mail. The Guidepost book lists I send are meaningful, empowering follow-ups to conversations we've had on visits and phone calls. They help people cope with the burden of sickness and the burnout of caregiving. The booklets, in English and Spanish, I pass on most are The Healing Power of the 23rd Psalm and A Prayer for Every Need. Guidepost Magazines offers a positive distraction and new hope. Guideposts and the Arch Care, in word and deed, a healing presence in a fractured world. Thank you, Sister Joanne Bayless, Valhalla, New York. Download our free booklets at guidepost.org/booklets or email outreach@guidepost.org for print booklets. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.